Good morning, Albuquerque, and welcome to another installment of ABQ Connect Now Business Radio Program. We're with you every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. And again, the nature of our show is to have business guests on, particularly those that have a great deal of influence in our business community. We have two such guests today. My name is Jeffrey Candelaria. I'm with Bank of the West, and I produce ABQ Connect Now, a series of monthly business events that are free to the business community. My co-host and sponsor is DJ Heckes. Welcome again to ABQ Connect Now, DJ.
Well, thanks, Jeffrey, with Exhibit.
Very good. And thank you again for being our sponsor.
You're welcome.
Our first guest.
Our first guest today is Nick Truyoil. Did I say that right?
Truyoil, yes. Thank you.
Thank you. And he's the founder and owner of Sabio Systems, LLC, right here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Sabio Systems offers temporary help and direct placement services in the fields of accounting and finance and high tech, which includes IT, doesn't it, and legal and office support. Welcome today.
Thank you, DJ. Jeffrey, I really appreciate your time this morning and looking forward to a great discussion with you both.
You know, and Nick, you've been here in business. How many years has Sabio Systems been open?
We are celebrating 10 years in business here in 2016. So we're very excited about that and accomplishment. And we look forward to many more years here in business in Albuquerque and throughout New Mexico.
You know, passion for staffing in today's environment. Share with us who's your perfect customer and your applicant.
Well, our employers of choice tend to be those companies that are looking to grow, are most likely been in business for between 5 to 10 years, have about 20 to 50 employees, and are in a stage of business where they just are hitting a wall and just can't figure out how to grow the business. So they reach out to us in hopes that we can augment what they currently have in the talent, and so we can get them over that hump and provide with them a more rapid deployment of resources to their customers, and which in turn, obviously, is going to help them grow in the future.
Nick, I have a question. I worked, and obviously Bob knows, I worked at the Hispano Chamber for 20 years. And in doing so, when I had members like your industry-type member would come in, staffing business companies, back then you had secretarial business, administrative types of jobs, brick and mortar. You go into an office, you staff people in an office. But today, because of technology, office environments don't necessarily exist as we knew them. Has that affected your industry, given that you don't necessarily need a secretary sitting behind a desk in a traditional chair, all that kind of stuff? Can you talk a little bit about some of those changes?
Sure, Jeffrey. In this age of social media now and outsourcing jobs all over the world, we're finding that it's becoming more and more of a need to specialize in your niches of solutions. So we primarily provide professional services in accounting, finance, legal, technology, and overall business operations. So by doing that, we've kind of narrowed the field in how we source our talent pool so that we make sure that the quality of our professionals is on par with what our customers need, because companies don't have that time, that luxury anymore as they did to hire 20, 30, 40 people at a time, whereas today, that work can be done by one or two employees. So we have to be very specialized in sourcing those talented individuals, making sure that they're the quality that our customers need and therefore are not a waste of their time and resources.
You know, and you guys are really unique in the way that you separate yourself from most staffing companies. I know, having worked with you, can you share with our audience, how you differentiate yourself and why people would want to call you?
Well, in today's world of, again, social media and digital media and technology, there's a more emphasis placed on a technical touch as opposed to the personal touch. And one of the things that we continue to do that most staffing companies no longer do is we still conduct face-to-face interviews with everyone that we place. And that allows us to really focus on the quality of the individual, the reasons for they're looking for a new career, not just to find a new job, but also more the emotional aspect of it and what they've gone through over the last decade, perhaps, in their employment history, for us to really make sure that what we can provide to our employers is the type of talent, not only technically speaking, but also professionally, and also the cultural fit that just you just can't get that by a phone screen or by email messaging, perhaps, or even by Skyping someone. It's just you just don't get that face-to-face feel that really allows you to figure out all the hot buttons that this individual brings to the table.
Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We're with you every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria along with
DJ Heckes.
And thank you again, DJ, for being a sponsor and the exclusive sponsor of ABQ Connect Now. We also produce live events. We'll talk about that here shortly. So, Nick, getting back to you. So, clearly in your industry, you work with the employee and you work with the employer. So, you work kind of, you wear those, both hats come from both perspectives. So, again, I keep going back to 2015 years ago. Back then, the employee would need someone for a career, and I've had 3 jobs in 30 years, me personally, right? But I understand, again, I could be wrong, but what I've gleaned from reading about millennials and young folk today, they tend to change jobs or switch jobs, not necessarily as a negative. Back in our day, Bob and Nick, we had, if we were changing jobs a lot, that was viewed as a negative. Today, that's not necessarily so. Can you talk a little bit about some of those, the flux, if you will, of career flux for millennials?
That's right, Jeff. And, you know, one of the things that we emphasize is a consultative approach to our services, not just to employers, but job seekers. And with job seekers, like you stated, Jeffrey, you happen to be one of the more unusual folks these days now where, you know, 3 jobs in the last 20 years or so is very unusual. In today's
30.
Oh, 30 years.
Yeah.
There you go. We're finding that millennials in general, specifically, a lot of them tend to be more solopreneurs. So we're finding it that it's no longer a stigma to have 5 jobs in the last 6 years or something like that. So what it does tell us, though, is the quality of the work, and that's what we dig into, and the reasons why they had all these different jobs in the last 6 years. So we really probe, again, into each individual as to what led them to choose that career path, as opposed to perhaps getting a federal government job or something like that where their work history might be 10 years in that same position. Excuse me. So it's not unusual now these days to have someone with that type of career track, and I would really advise employers not to look that as a negative anymore, because that is going to be more the norm than the exception in the coming years.
And that's interesting because, DJ, we've had this conversation with all our entrepreneurial guests the last 6 months. New Mexico is kind of odd in that Albuquerque particularly, I believe the last statistic, about 36% of all jobs are contingent on federal, state, municipal jobs. Those are long-term jobs.
Right.
That's good. But it's not necessarily conducive to entrepreneurialism as a culture. You know, you've got Bob here. He's an entrepreneur. You're an entrepreneur. But when we have all these folks graduate from high school, college, they're not necessarily thinking entrepreneurship because New Mexico doesn't tend to skew that way. So while it's good that we have federal contracts, it also has some impact on the entrepreneurial culture. Would you expand on any of that, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I completely agree. I think where we still see those individuals with long-term employment tend to be more in the scientific area, specifically here in the national laboratories and in the federal sector. So if you work at Sandia, Los Alamos, or any other federal type of research labs, you're going to have a much longer career track than if you work in the private sector. And that's understandable because, if you're a PhD with some type of specialized scientific knowledge, typically you're not going to find that type of position outside of the labs or other type of institutions like that here in New Mexico. So we completely understand that. However, we also serve the other, 66% of the workforce here, which is in the non-federal sector. And that's where we see a lot of these trends developing now. Especially over the last 5 years, that it's rapidly increasing the movement of these folks are having to do to keep up with new technologies and new skills.
You know, Nick, that kind of ties in because I'm a small business owner. You're mm-hmm. a small business owner. Our next guest, Bob Sachs, is also a small business owner. You know, Albuquerque is a really unique niche for being an entrepreneur, I feel, because we're number one in the nation for small business owners.
Right.
So when you're out there, and I know you do some behavioral assessments and skill assessments, so you have a unique niche of not only the face-to-face, but those assessments are key. And I know I use them in my small business, and body language is huge. So that face-to-face is critical. absolutely. You wouldn't see normally.
Absolutely. And you know, we use those assessments to really help us pinpoint some of the cases where we're just quite not sure what's missing in that individual, or perhaps there's something in your gut that's telling you something. So you use those assessments to really help you pinpoint what that could be. And hopefully by making that selection, it allows you to make an even better hire next time as well. So it's an ongoing learning process. It's not the ultimate solution, but you know, as assessments and the behavioral interviews that we provide as well to services to our customers really helps us pinpoint the exact talent that our employers are seeking today.
So if someone wants to check out Sabio Systems, how can they contact and learn more? Can you share that with our audience?
Oh, absolutely. So first of all, we can reach us on the web at our website, which is sabiosystems.com. You can also call us here locally at 505-792-8604. And directly on our website, we have a contact tab there as well. We can reach us for whether you're looking to hire someone or looking for employment. We can get back with you right away. And we can also conduct a chat with you here in the very near future.
Very good. And thank you again for tuning in to 1050 KTBL. We are called ABQ Connect Now. We're a business radio program. We're with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. I'm Jeffrey Candelari from Bank of the West, along with...
co-hosted with DJ Heckes with Exhibit.
DJ, talk about some of our live events coming up.
Yes, Jeffrey, I'm really excited. These live events for ABQ Connect Now are very well attended. And if you really want to get out there, remember, one of the ways to get your personal brand started or even consistently kept is to go to network. We're a one-degree society here in New Mexico. Thursday, March 31st from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Canyon Club. That's the next ABQ Connect Now event, 5 to 8 p.m. on March 31st at the Canyon Club. You can call 604-9081 to RSVP. Also, don't forget the annual 9th annual Exhibit B2B event is coming up April 26th. It's going to be on a Tuesday, the last Tuesday in April from 5 to 8 p.m. You can RSVP by going to exhib-it.com. Tickets are on sale for $25 until the week before the event, then $30 at door. We have 11 roundtable speakers. This is the event of the event to strategically network with a raffle with all proceeds donated to American Lung Association in New Mexico.
So, Nick, in a more contextual, generic regard, you have answered the question about emerging opportunities for careers in Albuquerque specifically. Where do you see more specifically those careers? What, in other words, if I'm 25 and I just graduated from college, what kind of career might I expect as far as opportunities that you see in Albuquerque versus a market like, let's say, Phoenix? Oh, compare and contrast, if you will. Just, and I'm asking you to surmise in Phoenix because you don't live there, but if you have any thoughts in those regards.
Right. I think Albuquerque is becoming a technology hotbed. And I think a lot of the efforts from city and state government is to really help augment that. So a lot of STEM programs that are being developed and carried out in throughout the state, I think, are doing a wonderful job.
Define STEM for our audience.
STEM is for it's the acronym for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And I highly encourage any, especially all the young folks going into college, to definitely consider that, because it's becoming a highly competitive field locally and nationally. But what it does is going to allow us to really emerge out of the doldrums that the New Mexico economy has been experiencing in the last few years, because we've been so highly dependent on more federal jobs in the past that I think rising technology positions, creativity, the entrepreneurship that these folks will bring is what's going to lift this state for the next generations and the next century. And I strongly recommend that that's an area where we can definitely grow and take the lead. I think because of our small population is also going to allow for an even faster jump for us here. I think this community is built for that, and I just can't emphasize that enough.
You know, and Nick, you're real involved. I know I see you often at the 1 Million Cups every Wednesday morning, where you get to see these entrepreneurs really highlight and see all the innovation that's going on. And you're a sponsor there too, aren't you?
Right. So we've been sponsoring 1 Million Cups since inception, January of 2015. And I've seen some great ideas come out of that, which are starting to really take hold now in the community. And we're starting to see more and more individuals coming from other parts of the state attending this event. And I think that's just going to help really launch that to additional audiences around the state and hopefully get those folks that were thinking about getting into technology, were thinking of getting into information security, to highly consider that now as an actual career goal and something that can be achievable here in New Mexico.
You know, and I also see, you know, Jeffy and I were talking last week on our last guest that once New Mexico finally hit 1 million, we kind of put ourselves in a different league. Don't you see a difference now that our infrastructure's changing, the downtown revitalization, the train trying to do all the traffic between Mexico and here and be that hub? I'm starting to see that in all the entrepreneurs really make a difference. I think we're energizing our city.
Well, and I completely agree with that, DJ. And also what's allowing that is the accessibility that high-speed broadband connection brings to the communities throughout New Mexico, which for a long time were left out of the economic engine of the state. So, you know, from Las Cruces up to Farmington, I think the possibilities are there for anyone wishing to accomplish something that perhaps 20 years ago was unthinkable. And I think the state recognizes that, and we believe that that's what's going to be our competitive edge in the next decade or so.
So getting back to STEM, you know, we're talking about mathematics, science, and our next guest, Bob, is in that space because that's what he does, a lot of that work in science and technology. Do you think, and this is a difficult question because I have very ardent opinions about it, but I was fortunate enough to go to a private school for 12 years, so there was an emphasis on math and science, period. Didn't matter if you were Hispanic, green, blue, white, you didn't get your algebra done, you're not passing this class. And again, I'm not asking you to move into a political space, but it seems like some of New Mexico tends to be about uniformity and everyone being equal in the classroom. So if you have someone that maybe is outstanding in science or math, does that student sometimes, I don't know, it seems like there's possibly a penalty for being outstanding in a certain area because others may not have that proclivity for math. So everyone is sort of kept to a sort of a mediocre standard. That's a difficult thing to say out loud, but I'm saying it out loud. Have you seen anything along those lines? Because you're interviewing these young folk for
right.
jobs.
I think what we've seen is definitely that the talent pool is very shallow for when it comes to those type of qualified individuals. So we do struggle in finding those people here in New Mexico. And
without moving into a political agenda space, what do you surmise that to be? Why is that?
I think it's a cultural shift that hasn't taken hold here. I think over the last, you know, 25, 30 years, most of the career paths for your typical high schooler didn't lead into STEM-related jobs. It led into more blue-collar type of positions, maybe agricultural as well, too. But I think the time is now has arrived where that's just no longer going to cut it in today's economy. As you see, you know, the workforce is shrinking. A lot more of the baby boomers are retiring. A lot of the other folks that are now coming up, the millennials are coming up, the X generation as well, too, are tending to figure out that those jobs in manufacturing that were available 30 years ago are just no longer the case. So you have to shift in the areas of your career path, and technology, engineering, science is going to be the way to go for the future.
And that's a great point because I'm in banking, and banking is changing.
Yes.
Folks do banking online. Branches,
right.
as we know them, an
and
actual brick-and-mortar store, they're going away.
Yes.
Because that demand is no longer there. So that gets me back to that same point. I don't know if we collectively, maybe this is a rhetorical question, but I tend to be very opinionated about it. I'm not running for office, and what the hell? I don't know that we demand collectively as New Mexicans that we celebrate the achievement of education. I don't know that we celebrate that enough because inside that space is science, math, technology, reading, writing, the basics, the fundamental rudiments that makes us, excel in whatever skills we possess.
You know, let's talk about, you do a lot of research, and I know you do a lot of reading. And with the state's growing startup and all of the community, what do you see happening in the next 10 years in Albuquerque in the industry of employment and jobs? Because last time I read, we had 67,000 unemployed jobs for people in New Mexico. What do you see trending, Nick?
Well, I think the next 10 years, I think the groundwork is being laid now to get us where we want to be in 10 years. It is going to be a tough road, but it's something that I think with the efforts that are being put in the private sector and in the government sector, I think that combination will get us there. It's just a matter of really sticking to that path of growth, and that instructional level has to be there continuously from schools to parents getting involved. But it is going to be a tough road. I think for us to get there, we'll probably need to create somewhere between 140,000 jobs in the next decade to get us where we want to be. So that tells you at the speed that we need to grow in order to get us there. Okay, so it's definitely going to be a very challenging task, but I think most people realize that. And due to the size of our state, we know that we have to make a shift, a complete shift in how we've educated our kids in the past and the career paths that we selected for our families in the past. We have to change that outlook going forward.
So I'm hearing you say, and this is what you do for a living, that when we collectively have conversations with charter schools, with parochial schools, with APS board of directors and all those folks that create curriculum, that we want to stress that it's important that we not reduce but actually highlight the importance of math, science, and technology.
I completely agree with that.
So let's turn in also, because Manpower gave a report a few years ago that we're specializing ourselves into niche fields like that, and we're losing the trade. We're losing the specialization of the plumber and the craftsman. What do you see also on that side? Are we all going to be just smart technos?
Well, you know, New Mexico, for the most part, hasn't been a big manufacturing hotbed. So we're not going to be losing that much of it as you would, say, in a state like Ohio, for example, or Pennsylvania, where there was a long tradition of manufacturing. In New Mexico, that was a very small percentage of the population that was, you know, involved in manufacturing at that point. So I don't think the plumbing trade will ever go away, the electrical trade will ever go away, because those jobs will always be there. It's just that due to the size of our population, it wasn't that very big to begin with. So I think part of the STEM program does include things like, you know, engineering and plumbers, electricians, and all the tradespeople that I think will eventually perhaps grow with the investments in technology, because a lot of those things that they're working with now are going to be digital, you know, HVAC systems. You know, I was just talking with Bob about that. And those things are now being controlled electronically from over the web, you know, if you wish. So your dishwasher, everything is going to be in one panel pretty much, is what they're calling the Internet of Things, where those things that are not technically programmed by you as the user will be in the very near future. So you'll have complete control over your appliances, your automobile, you know, anything in your home pretty much at the touch of a button from anywhere that you happen
to be. But to our point, there's still an algorithm behind that. There's still an engineer behind that. And that's important, getting back to STEM. So let's get to you, DJ. Let's talk about your B2B event, or our B2B event coming up, the biggest single networking event in the state.
It is. Jeffrey, and I'm really excited because RSVPs are really coming in a lot. We have 97 exhibitors. And, you know, this is an event that's a strategic alignment of business owners. Our audience are 70% business owners, 20% managers, and 10% miscellaneous jobs. And why this event has empowered me to really grow it, you know, how do you find a venue that can accommodate 1,000 people, first of all, in New Mexico? That was a challenge. So we took it to Sandia Resort this year. But I'm really excited about the roundtable events. I talk to business owners every day and managers, and they're struggling, either if you're an existing business or a startup, of the resources that are available. New Mexico has a lot of free resources. You just have to get in touch with the right avenues, like SBA and you know, AED, all these different resources, and what's out there to empower you to take your business to the next level. Again, the event starts from 5 to 8. There's a pre-event, which are the roundtables. The first 110 people that finish signing up, and we're getting halfway filled, can attend the roundtables absolutely free. So there's only 110 seats available in two sessions. Also, make sure you network and take advantage of the one drink ticket is included and the food when you attend the event.
Very good. And, you know, DJ, I want to publicly thank you for supporting our live extension of this radio show called ABQ Connect Now. I think I'm the only banker in the state that has my own monthly business networking event that's free for the business community, and you've supported that most aggressively. When I asked you to help me with graphics, when I asked you to help me find a venue, you're always there, and I want to thank you out loud and publicly. Some of our future venues include the Canyon Club, Marcello's, Epicenter, ABQID, Dave & Buster's. We're going to be at Zinc downtown or at Knob Hill.
And we even booked September and next January.
That's right. We're booked all the way through basically next year. So basically what we've done is we've created our own, in a sense, Chamber of Commerce that's a free, courtesy-oriented series of activities for the business community. Getting back to you, Nick, we only have a couple of minutes left. Any concluding thoughts about your industry or anything you'd like to share from a business owner perspective with our audience?
Well, again, thank you both, Jeffrey and DJ, for this opportunity. You know, Sabio Systems now going into our 10th year, we're seeing a lot of changes happening in the staffing world, especially for our job seekers. It's tending to be a much more challenging environment for people seeking new opportunities. So I highly encourage anyone that is looking for a new opportunity to give us a call and discuss exactly why they're looking to change careers at this point, and to take their time and seriously think about what's driving them to make those career choices, because we will offer that advice and then that counseling to you in person here at the office, which we're located on Montgomery, just west of San Mateo. But we tend to create an environment where, if being in February of 2016 now, this is a time when a lot of people reflect on where they want to be the rest of this year and then the coming year. So if you'd like to really think about that, give us a call. You can reach us at 792-8604 or visit us on the web at sabiosystems.com, and we would love to be of a resource for you.
We appreciate that, Nick. Again, our next ABQ Connect Now live event is March 31st. It's going to be at the Canyon Club. For those of you that don't know, the Canyon Club is the former country club at Four Hills, a beautiful venue. And it's a free event. If you'd like to attend, it's from 5 to 8 p.m. And give me a call, 604-9081, 604-9081. I'm Jeffrey Candelier, along with DJ Haggis.
So, Nick, as a business owner, what can you share with our audience of what keeps you up at night?
What keeps me up at night these days? Well, I don't have to worry about little kids anymore, so I'm really happy about that. but I think just making New Mexico great again. Our mission statement is to make New Mexico the most desirable place to live, one employee and one employer at a time. And I want to make sure that people here keep the faith. I think this state does have the skills, the resources, and the talent to pull ahead. So it's just a matter of us coming together and building that infrastructure between people and business.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Nick, for being a guest. Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. Please stay tuned. We'll have a second segment after this brief break. Welcome back to our second segment of ABQ Connect Now. We're a business radio program. We're with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. on 1050 KTBL. I am Jeffrey Candelaria, along with
DJ Haggis with Exhib It.
And thank you, DJ, for being the exclusive sponsor of ABQ Connect Now. We are so excited to have our next guest. Please introduce Mr. Sachs.
Yes, Mr. Robert Sachs. He's the owner, president, and CEO of Team Technologies, a locally based company. Formerly, it was called Team Specialty Products. Team is also known as Team, is a high-tech engineering and manufacturing company located in the Science Tech and Technology Park in Albuquerque. Welcome today, Bob.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We really appreciate it. You know, Team Technologies, I hear your name everywhere. It's you guys are doing some really neat incubation things. Can you share with our audience a little bit about your why you exist? And I know you come from a long history, don't you? Also 15th generation in New Mexico.
Yeah. Well, Team Technologies was really designed and built to service the national laboratories. And so that's really how the company started. Team Specialty Products started 30 years ago, and Team Technologies is a compilation of Team Specialty Products and another company called MC Manufacturing. And we rebranded it to Team Technologies a few years ago, back in 2006, I think. And since then, we've been, I've been corrected, though, on the incubation word. I've been told to call it acceleration because we're accelerating technologies. So I said, okay, I'll start trying to call it accelerating. So.
Those terms can be a little confusing.
Right.
Incubator, accelerator, there's ABQID, there's fat pipe, there's all these support mechanisms. All the parlance or vernacular can be confusing. So I've been to your shop two or three times over the last 10 years, and it's impressive. You have a lot of research development. You're doing a lot of prototype work, all that. Basically, you're providing solutions to problems.
Right.
So how do you find the problem so that you can find the solution? And can you give us a real-world example of that? In other words, you found a problem. Maybe it was glue on an airplane because the rivets are falling off. So you find that solution to that problem. And I'm using a silly example, but you understand my point.
Yeah, I wish it was that simple, that you find a problem and then you go match a technology to that. It doesn't seem to work that way a lot of the time, and that's what we call a pull from the market. But many times we end up with a push of the technology into the market and trying to find a spot for that technology to do something.
So you're creating an innovative application.
Well, and I'm not saying that's the right path. I mean, I'd much rather have what you described as a pull from the market where there's a problem out there, we go try and match a technology to it. But what we find is that this area is so rich in technologies that, we've become almost like a shark tank where people that have a hardware product that they want to develop end up at our door one way or another, and they're asking us to help them to advance the technology up what we call the technology readiness level. And they come in the door at different stages of that. Some are at the idea stage, and some have maybe gone through the NMSBA program or something like that, and they've advanced the technology to maybe a TRL 3 or 4.
When you say we're very technology stressed, in a good way, we stress
right.
technology, is that coming from the government space, from the science and lab space? Is that coming from the private sector space?
It's both, and they're feeding off each other. I think a lot of technology comes out of the national labs, out of Air Force research labs, out of the universities. And a lot of people come to us with they've worked at those environments, and now they have an idea and they've taken a leave of absence or something and they want to spin out their technology. And so it's really both. I mean, we see people from all walks of life, people that moved in New Mexico for lifestyle that have been very successful back east or somewhere like that, and they've got an idea. We see those, and we try and help as many as we can. It doesn't always work out, but we try our best within our bandwidth to help.
So you really have an extensive background, and you got your, BA and MBA right here at UNM, didn't you?
Well, I did my BBA and my BS at New Mexico State University, and then I did the executive MBA here at UNM, so I'm a Aggie Lobo hybrid.
Yeah, I read that, and I'm like, okay, so what do you do at the Aggie Lobo game?
I
leave at halftime.
Change my shirt at halftime. Right?
And you also have an extensive background. Do you feel like you're working in your passion? Because your background really is design engineering and systems engineering. Do
right.
you think that really stems from that passion to support accelerator programs?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we love technology. We love helping people develop their technology. And one of the things we joke about is we say, we really need a cash cow to support our technology habit that we have. And eventually we think we'll get there. But in the meantime, it's a long road for technology development. And sometimes people walk in with a naive concept about how to go from a TRL1 all the way to a TRL9. That's kind of the measurement that we use. They don't realize the long road that it takes to, you know, they've dubbed that, you know, crossing the chasm, or, you know, that's the valley of death where most technologies die, is, you know, trying to develop that. And so we try and also educate people along the way to give them the right expectation. You know, sometimes I walk in and say, okay, I've got this prototype that I built in my garage. I want you to take that prototype to the next level, and then kind of think, well, we're going to build millions of these in China now and be in the market. It just doesn't quite work that way. And it just takes lots of iterations, lots of patience. I tell people to use the pi, you know, 3.14 is better than finding the circumference of a circle. Just take your best guess and multiply it by 3.1 by pi, and that's probably a better place where you're going to end up in terms of time, money, and everything in terms of developing a product. It just takes time and money.
Very good. So the brick phone was introduced in 81, 83, and then Apple might be a great example of, they took that technology and they built a whole space called the smartphone, essentially, out of the brick phone. Mm-hmm. So now people don't remember the brick phone because this has become so ubiquitous. That would be an example of maybe Apple seeing the opportunity, kind of like what you talked about at the outset. So when you see something in your shop that can be applied to something that's not being applied there, do you build prototypes for that? And once you do those prototypes and now you have something that can be put forth in a marketplace, how do you actually take that to a market? I don't know if I'm asking my question correctly, but how do you take something that's a prototype or an application to an actual buyer?
It's like the execution, the implementation.
Well, that's really the tough part, and that's where we were talking about earlier about the pull from the market. And one of the things that we try to do is vet these technologies early. And one of the resources that we use is the Anderson School of Management, the MOT program. Dr. Steve Walsh has been extremely helpful in helping us to vet these technologies. And in some cases, they'll do a study, a market study. They'll look at the competition, and they'll come back. I remember the first time they had some bad news for me on a technology that we were developing, and the bad news was, hey, I don't recommend you go forward with this technology. There's somebody else that leapfrogged you along the way, and we didn't know that, and they were very shy to give me that news. I was thrilled because now I could abandon that project and move on to the next thing. I mean, it's quick to fail is kind of what you hear a lot in entrepreneurship and in technology development, and so – But getting to that road that you're talking about, I mean, we've been accelerating companies. We started with NASA 15 years ago on a program called SATOP, and we've helped literally hundreds of people develop their technologies. But we really haven't heard of a lot of those that have gone huge. Maybe they got bought out by someone else and we lost track of the name or something. But it's a tough road to get from what you're talking about, from that product to the market. But we try and vet them as much as we can up front.
I'll give you an example. When I was at the Chamber, this was about 15 years ago,
right,
SATOP actually cured a real-world problem. Mm-hmm. I think it was, I won't mention the hamburger place, but there was a hamburger place that we all know, I won't mention the name. They were having a problem with their bags. Mm-hmm. When you put a hamburger in there, it's hot.
Yeah.
So it was starting to unfurl at the bottom or, you know, come undone. So the SATOP program that you're talking about actually made and reconfigured a glue, or some kind of adhesive, that now is in almost all hamburger bags, as a real-world example of what we call a technology. But for the layman, it's now they can pick up their bag in their car and it's not going to spill all over their seat.
Well, it was a great program, that SATOP, and I wish we could have something like that again, because people would come into us with an idea. They wanted their prototype advanced. We were able to show them to the NASA website. They were able to apply, and then NASA would pay us to solve their problem. Now, we never made money off those, but it was a community service that we did. In fact, 2 years in a row, we won the national title for the ones that did the most SATOP solutions that we solve for people.
Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We're with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. on KTBL 1050. I'm Jeffrey Candelari along with
DJ Heckes.
Our guest is Robert Sachs. He's president and CEO of Team Technologies. So getting back to what you said, is that kind of thing, we use the word technology transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Are you involved in that space?
We are.
And if so, talk about what technology transfer is?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of technologies that are being developed here in our national labs, at our universities, and they take them so far based on the mission or whatever it is that they're developing those for, and it's not necessarily for a commercial product. So it's up to us as entrepreneurs to go kind of look on the shelf and see what's available, and it's up to us to kind of make that leap from whatever that is to a commercial product. One example of that is we licensed a technology from Sandia National Labs a number of years ago, and they've really done a great job of streamlining that whole process, by the way. And it's an energetic tool, and it's used for taking out IEDs and bomb squads and things like that. It's called a Stingray, and we were actually featured in Time magazine that year for one of the best technology advances of that year. And it was a pretty simple process. We did have to compete for it. There were six other companies that wanted the technology, and we were able to get it. And we've advanced that technology significantly, and we're selling a number of those units today. So, it's a good program, and it can really work.
Are you involved in the beer, in the wine industry, especially here in Albuquerque? We're like one of the largest areas for opening up beer.
I'm involved in two different things. One is a new high-end kegerator that we're developing for the beer and wine industry, and these were beer and wine people that approached us a year and a half ago, and we took on the project, and we're part owners of the company as a result of the engineering services that we've provided. And we're hoping to launch that project this year. Very exciting, a beautiful product. And we say that it's a kegerator that you're going to be able to have in your kitchen and not necessarily in your man cave or out in the garage or in the back porch. The other thing that I'm involved in is a wine company called Vara Wines, V-A-R-A. And you can look it up online. And real excited about that. And what we're trying to do with that right now, we're buying the juice from Spain and Napa Valley, but we're hoping to develop a world class grape, you know, here in New Mexico that we can, be on the world class restaurants.
And would that be more on the spectrum of Riesling or on the spectrum of like a Cabernet?
Well, we have all kinds, and we've got whites and reds, and we even have a sparkling Cava, and so pretty excited about that. I've been involved in that in the last 4 or 5 months. But I've been an amateur winemaker for 10 years. I have a vineyard at my home, and I make homemade wine. And,
you know, Bob, one of the first wineries in what is now the United States was in New Mexico.
Yeah, it was south of Socorro.
That's right.
Right.
This is like, we're talking about
1620
or somewhere there. You know, no offense to the Pilgrims, but they get all kinds of credit.
Right.
The Spaniards were here, Coronado was here, 1540. That's 60 years before Plymouth Rock and all that.
That's
and
right.
No one ever talks about that.
And we mined for gold just east of here, too, in the 1500s,
What do you
too?
Think El Dorado means?
So let's go back to the wine company. So do you get to go back and forth to Napa Valley? I love that area.
Well, so far I've been jealous of my partners because they get to do all that, and I'm stuck at doing technology stuff at T most of the
time.
That's
what you get for doing the design engineering,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. So one of these days I'll free up some time to make some of those trips. But it's something that's I just love it. I'm a farmer rancher at heart, and winemaking fits well with farming. It fits well with kind of science too, you know, because there's a chemistry to winemaking and having a blast with it.
Let's get to the business economy. You know,
sure.
What do you think about today's toughest business environment, you know, in business? What do you attribute to that? You know,
well,
in New Mexico, you hear businesses struggling.
I think the toughest thing right now is just being able to get the financial resources that you need. I mean, I think the banks, and Jeffrey, I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like things like the Dodd-Frank law have really tied the hands. And, you know, I've asked some of the politicians, well, gosh, you know, it seems like you've really hurt small business with that. And the response I get is, well, that was an unintended consequence. And, well, if it was unintended, well, then fix it, you know. And so that's really the biggest challenge with small business today is you can't get the kind of capital that you need to really thrive. It seems like you can get just enough to just kind of stay alive, you
like
know.
Like a Band-Aid.
Yeah, and so it kind of, we always tease, we say, gosh, one of these days we're going to get to eat a steak, you know, we're eating a lot of rice and beans right now, but, you know, so that's the biggest challenge that I see by far.
Can you explain the Dodd-Frank, what you just mentioned?
You know, I'm not an expert in it, so I guess I'd be a little reluctant to go very deep into it, but the way I understand it is it kind of takes maybe what would have been an asset on the balance sheet of the bank and puts it on the liability side and requires them to set that same amount of money aside and not invest it as a, you know, maybe an overreaction to what happened in 2008, you know. I don't know, but
I think generically,
that's what it feels like to me.
Generically speaking, there was a lot of irresponsibility in the industry, in banking. There was a lot of irresponsibility as far as consumers, too, buying homes. They didn't understand the implications. There was a lot of just generic irresponsibility along a lot of lines. So consequently, the federal government decided to impose the Dodd-Frank Act to tighten up the way loans are provided, as an example, and I'm being very simplistic here. So at the end, it's making banks have a much smaller risk capacity. So if I possibly 30 years ago saw a technology or a business that was entrepreneurial, maybe a bank would have more of an appetite to take a risk to finance that project.
Mm-hmm.
But since this particular federal imposition, banks clearly are going to be more conservative about it because they're highly regulated too. And that's a very simple answer. But the taking of risk to finance projects is not what it was 30 years ago, essentially.
Hmm. So, Bob, tell us a little bit. You're also a give back to the community. I know I served with you on the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Board, and you were the 2014 chair. You know, how do you have time to run this accelerator program, and how many companies do you support at the same time also and do all this volunteerism?
Well, we've got, I think, about a dozen companies that we're accelerating. Some of them we have ownership in those companies, and some of them we're providing inexpensive space in the Sandia Science and Technology Park in our building, and they range from a variety of technologies, from an ozone machine that we're developing for water purification to infinitely variable transmission that we're developing for oil and gas to the kegerator. You know, it just runs the range of technologies. And in terms of the community, I mean, I try and do what I can when I'm asked to be on a board. Most of the time I'll say yes and I'll do it. And the chamber, the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber, was a great experience for me. It's a great organization. Met a lot of people that I know are going to be lifetime friends. And so it's a two-way street. You know, we've all got things that bring us down and make us humble. I have two autistic sons, so, you know, the autism and all that is a big deal for me, and I don't get as involved in the autism groups as I'd like, but we've got some ideas for some things that would help the autism population that I don't want to really talk about yet because it's not a done deal. We try and do the best that we can, and it's everything kind of blends into, you know, home life, the business, the community stuff is all blended in. So we try and do our best. I mean, we're longtime community people, and we love this community, and we want to be.
That's
part
right.
Of it.
You're Bethlehem, right?
Yeah. I'm from Belen. Bethlehem.
There you go. So Bob, talk a little bit about, if you can, the difference between we touched on earlier, incubator, accelerator.
Okay. Well, again, probably Dr. Walsh would be a better guy to really give you the differences, but the way I understand it is incubation is looking at the total company profile, how to create a business plan, how to go get financing, how to sell your product, how to create all the art graphics and things like that. Whereas acceleration is more focused on the technology itself and trying to accelerate that technology through that technology readiness level that we talk a lot about. And so that's a simplistic view of how I would see the differences.
Yeah.
In the
From my understanding, an incubator has more of a curriculum involved, too. There's more stages involved.
Exactly.
And you're fast-tracking on that.
We are, and we try to throw some education in there as well. In fact, just about everybody that approaches us, you can tell who's got the season behind them and the scar tissue and who's, you know, green at this whole thing. And the ones that don't have a lot of experience, I almost feel like saying, you know, I'm not going to take your project till you go take Dr. Walsh's couple of his classes in management of technology or something like that, because you really have to understand that technology and a lot of even a simple technology can take a lot of steps and a lot more time than you would think. It doesn't have to be something like our cold plasma ozone machine that does it. It could be something very simple, but it just takes time. And
some perspective on that. I was reading this. I watched Nova every Wednesday night. They had a stat that was interesting. In the last 20 years, there's been more technology metamorphosis and application and flux than in the history of mankind before that. Think about that. Since 2000, basically, there's been more technology shifting and change and flux than any time before 2000. Since
even more than the 80s with all the telephone influx and all the
technology?
The answer
is yes. Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. Think about the brick phone. Didn't even exist in the 80s. Now you've got, you can do so many things on a smartphone. That was almost inconceivable. Not even Star Trek and those old 1960s movies had such a device at your hand. And so it's just an amazing world that you live in with all the flux, all the change, all the adaptability, all the agility you need just to be effective and operate in that space.
It is. You know, one of the things that we see an awful lot of is people coming in wanting to make something smart, a hat, a couch, you know, whatever, they want to put some kind of smarts into it. And so we see an awful lot of that. And, yeah, I tell my wife all the time, gosh, can you imagine if our grandparents came back today and just landed in this world that we live in? I mean, they'd be just completely blown away at what we've done.
Yeah, like an application, app, APP. Yeah. That in and of itself is an astounding change from 5 years ago. There's an app for everything. There's an app to go to the bathroom. I mean, it's just incredible. But DJ, some of our live events.
Yes. Remember, save the date and make sure you RSVP by calling 604-9081. Our next event is Thursday, March 31st from 5 to 8 p.m. That's the ABQ Connect Now Business Exchange. 604-9081 at the Canyon Club, 5 to 8 on March 31st. And also RSVP to get that ticket to attend to attend a roundtable on April 26th, pre-event, and then 5 to 8 is the main event. You can RSVP by calling 828-0574 or just go to the web at exhib-it.com.
So, Bob, I asked this question of all of our guests. What is your overall impression of our ecosystem in Albuquerque versus 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and today? Just your overall impressions.
Well, I think that in the last just few years, we've made a tremendous leap in that whole thing. I mean, this things that are going on at ABQID, Innovate Albuquerque, Fat Pipe, you know, all these things that are going on, C3 at Sandia, our accelerator at Team. It seems like the connections are being made, and we're gonna hit a big one with the state with all that. And so from, you know, 20 years ago, I think we were mostly all focused on government contracts and things like that. And now we're having to shift. We're gonna all still be dependent on government contracts, but we need to shift into the commercial world. And so I see all the activity that's going on in the community it's tremendous, and I think it's really going to pay big dividends, and I'm excited about it. Now, people say, well, gosh, we never see you at the Million Cups or here or there, and I say, well, I'd love to be there. It's just that I've got my nose to the grindstone, and, you know, we're trying to stay focused, and hopefully when I look up, the world is still there.
So what I'm gleaning with what you said, and I respect you because you live this every day, the private sector is emerging.
It is.
In New Mexico, well, particularly Albuquerque, because of all the resources that are really being conducive and fostering that.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Can you share with us, without going into any trade secrets, of what kind of projects you're working on besides what you just shared on the beer and wine?
We've got infinitely variable transmission that we tested on a pump jack up in the Four Corners area. For being able to control the speed control on internal combustion engine driven wells, and We concluded the 14-month beta test, and now we know exactly what changes we need to make to take that technology to the next level. We're looking for investors for that technology. Another technology that we're working on that I briefly mentioned is the only true cold plasma ozone production machine in the world. And what it does is it creates very high levels of ozone with a very consuming a lot less energy than the way they produce ozone right now, which would be very conducive to large municipal water projects and things like that. So it runs the range of those kinds of things, and we're also doing a lot of work, of course, with Sandia, with Los Alamos, with Kansas City, with Air Force Research Labs, the Marines, the Navy, and several commercial companies here in New Mexico that we do work with. So
very good.
So any of those coming, like, what stages? You mentioned earlier an acronym, TQ or TML.
TRL, yeah.
Explain that.
Well, technology readiness level, you can do a Google search on it, and there's several measures to technology readiness level. There's the DOD has their version of it. NASA has their version of it. But it's really just a measure of where you are with technology. And we talk a lot about technology readiness level. It's an old acronym, been around a long time, but it fits very well with what we do and how we measure where we're at and how quickly we can get there. So
in the world of, you know, military technology, obviously we can't talk about some of that because it's clandestine, but do you see as much demand in that space as you did 10, 20 years ago when you started, or is it decreased?
No, we don't. It's decreased significantly from our perspective. Now, there's some people are looking at things that they dismantled maybe 10 years ago, and we're hearing rumors that some of those things are going to come back because we really need that capability within our warfighters and things like that. So, yeah, everything has a cycle. I think the pendulum's going to swing, but right now it's been a lot less than what we've typically seen.
And that's a function of governance because, again, whether you care for the Republicans or the Democrats, a lot of time those, you know, ideologies do have implications on business, depending on the administration. So Dodd-Frank is a product of the Obama administration, and we understand why he did it. It makes a lot of sense, but it had some unintended consequences, and so we, in the end, live with that. So we've got about 20 seconds. Any concluding thoughts, Bob?
Well, I'm just happy to be here. Come see us over at Team if you have a project that you're interested in. We're always happy to take a look at it. We may not be able to take every project because we only have so much bandwidth.
Excellent.
But we'd love to see you.
Thank you again for being a guest. Thank you, DJ. We'll be back with you next week on ABQ Connect Now.